Welcome to Politically Enraged, the Lefties Refuge. Politically Enraged is a podcast purpose-built to discuss British and international disunity in political spaces, talk through ideas, introduce you to amazing people, and fight back against authoritarianism. My name is David Moo, I'm your host, and I hope you'll stick with us. Follow our Twitter at Political Rages, find us on Instagram and Ko-fi at Politically Enraged, and let's speak truth to power. Hello and welcome to Politically Enraged, the podcast that is designed to make you feel horny for lefties. Today's episode is all about misogyny in healthcare. I've spent the last 3 weeks researching misogyny in healthcare. I've read scholarly journals and I've done all the things that you're meant to do research-wise. But I realised that I had a big leg up on a lot of people because my internet platform isn't huge, but it's pretty extensive. And I decided that I was going to reach out to the women that I follow and I was going to be as intersectional as possible and interview all different types of women and also people who have experienced the life of women. I interviewed trans men, women of colour, cis white women. I asked people about their experiences of healthcare and the misogyny therein. And it's been harrowing, bearing in mind that I am a man and I will never experience the depths of what a lot of people have told me. But the idea of going through the type of indifference, the outright hostility, and the frightening things that women have had to go through, it's definitely been eye-opening. Women's needs traditionally have been completely overlooked by society, even modern society, and we can pretend to be a society that caters to everyone with equality. Perhaps we may even be that, but it's equity that really concerns me. Equity is really important, and equity is recognizing and valuing the differences that people have, but still treating them with respect. And I think that we fall really short there. And when it comes to equality, I still don't believe that we live in a society that treats women with equality. Definitely not. How often do you see the stupid tropes on TV of, you know, the strong girl boss? Well, why is that hailed as some groundbreaking thing? Why do you need to make a big deal out of it? Women are strong, women are powerful. And to continue to highlight that as some one-off just shows how deep and pervasive that sort of indifference towards strong women goes. But my big concern ran with medical misogyny, and there's a lot of reasons that I decided to talk about it at length. Number one is because I have worked alongside the medical sector for a decade until I decided to quit and start trying to make something of myself as a virulent anti-Tory. And I started looking at exactly how being a woman or being perceived to be a woman has impacted on people's lives. This is something that I've nursed as an interest for a really long time, but actually stepping it up and doing my own on the ground research, it's been eye-opening and it's been frightening, really. I've had 300-400 messages, all from women reaching out with their stories or from trans men telling me what it was like pre-transition. That actually gives me a great starting off point because I've interviewed no less than 3 different trans guys and they all told me, and they all had the same experience, which was when they were perceived as women, just starting out on their journey, they were treated completely differently to when they'd started to transition and they started to be perceived as men. They were told that their pain wasn't that serious, that they needed to just suck it up and, you know, deal with it. But when they were men, when they were finally who they actually are, they were taken seriously. They were given medical intervention, the proper care plans. And if that doesn't spell out medical misogyny at its heart, then what else does? Historically speaking, women have always been treated with complete indifference when it comes to their bodies. Their bodily autonomy hasn't mattered, their bodily choices haven't mattered, and if you were an outlier towards what was expected of women, then you were practically castigated. I mean, if you actually read really detailed information about the witch burnings, it wasn't always some scary old crone at the end of the road. It could be a woman that was smarter than other women, and it pissed men off. So they would literally burn her at the stake. And I guess the question is, have we really moved that far on from that? looking at some of the responses and the answers that I've gotten to my questions, it's hard to say yes. For the men out there, and there are over 50% of my audience regularly tends to be men. For the men out there, I just want you to imagine what it would be like to just go through your bog standard, completely average cis female's experience of having a period every month and going through 6 days of hormone changes and everything that comes along with it, including the pain and having to deal with bleeding and all of those things. I think that we completely and utterly overlook how lucky we are that we don't go through those things. And I think that when you start to realize that a vast proportion of the world goes through that and we don't take it into account, you really start to see straight away that the world is built on almost a two-tier system that caters towards people that don't go through that. I'll be the first to admit that I'm a bit of a wuss, and if I hurt myself or if I get sick, I'm like, I am not going to work. And with the advent of working from home, I can still do my job. That's fine, because I'm not around people. But I can't imagine going through what so many of the population do and going about my normal daily activities. I've recently strained my rib muscles, which is, by just as a sidebar, if you ever do it, it's agonizing. And it's been so hard for me to just do anything. I went for a walk today and I breezed past a barrier, caught myself, and literally had to stand there for a second to be like, don't scream in pain. And people do that on the regular. Getting down into the meatier part of it though, one of the things that's really started to freak me out is exactly how overlooked women in medicine are. I'm talking first about actual women who do medicine. I've been told quite a lot of stories this last week in particular. One was by a cis male friend of mine who's a nurse, and he works closely with a female consultant. And he says without fail, almost every time he goes into a coding situation, everyone will look at him for instructions. And every single time he and his consultant have to go, she's in charge. Because for some reason, it's seen that men will be the authority figure. Now, I love my friend very much, but I really can't see why anyone would look at him over the countenance of a female doctor and go, he's the one in charge. But I'm not a sexist prick. And I can't imagine what it's like to have that kind of tunnel vision that when you look at someone with the bearing of a doctor, you don't immediately sense the authority there. I've been around a lot of female doctors. I've been around a lot of very senior female doctors. And there's no mistaking that they are a female doctor who is in charge. You can tell just by looking at them. It doesn't matter about height, doesn't matter about age. There is a bearing and a respectability that comes with being a senior doctor. And women carry it well. And you can tell. So to me, when my friend was telling me this, all I could think was, that is blatant misogyny, because you know. He told me a lot of stories about how female nurses have been spoken to by male colleagues, whether they're at the same level or senior to them. And some of the stories he told me were ridiculous. Reducing people to actual tears is disgraceful. And I don't understand why you would ever do that. Working in a healthcare setting, you are trying to save people's lives. And if you're going to completely and utterly undervalue someone, what's their incentive to help you? So what you're then relying on is someone that you've pissed off to help you do something incredibly important. And the utter disrespect that that must entail, to piss someone off and then expect them to help you do something as serious as saving someone's life. It's not like they have a choice. You have to be the bigger person while someone's just completely besmirched you in front of a room full of people. But now we move on to the most worrying part of it. How deeply ingrained medical misogyny is from the patient's perspective. And I have had hundreds of messages telling me stories that have made my blood run cold. I cannot believe what women, both cis and trans, and what trans men have to go through. It is obscene. One of the most troubling things is that there are a couple of conditions which tend to go with people with uteruses and ovaries and wombs and things like that, like PCOS. And people will be diagnosed with PCOS after months and months and months and months and months and months and months of pushing their doctors to look. Part of that is because PCOS has quite a wide array of symptoms, But a wide array of symptoms absolutely does not mean that it should take that long to be diagnosed. It should be something that's commonly checked for with anyone with the equipment to get PCOS because it's a debilitating condition. But it's not done. Doctors often, not always, doctors often don't care. They're more bothered about prescribing painkillers. Every single person I have spoken to who has been diagnosed with PCOS has told me, without fail, every single person, and that's 12 people off the top of my head, all of them have said that they were told, that's just what it feels like. You've just got to put up with it. You've got to cope. Have you tried a hot water bottle? Have you tried a bath? Have you tried a shower? I can't imagine going through the kind of gut-wrenching pain that comes with a condition like PCOS, mostly because I don't have the equipment, and to be told to take a bath. The only priority that I can give to that is calling up the mental health intervention services and being told to take a bath, because that does happen too. Now, at this point, I just want to pause for a second and say that none of this, the article that I've written, and none of this podcast, none of the research I've done, none of it is meant to besmirch the wonderful work that is done in healthcare, because healthcare is extremely important, and I treasure our NHS. But this is about a bedrock deep issue with medicine itself. You are taught misogyny when you are taught medicine. They go hand in hand. They are white-clad partners walking down the same path. And we need to break that link. So while doctors and nurses and everybody else who does an amazing job are brilliant, brilliant workers and do what they can to help people, I feel like they need to understand just as much as anybody that misogyny is ingrained deep in everything you've ever learned. The problem with misogyny and calling out misogyny and pointing it out and talking about it is that people switch off really quickly. I've, like so many times when I've spoken about misogynistic stuff, I've been told, oh, you blame everything on misogyny. And that's because misogyny is so deeply ingrained into our society that we just don't understand how it is. There's so many women out there that will tell you things that they think about on the daily, the weekly, the monthly that should change, that would make parity with women, and it isn't done. And I'll never understand why. It seems like absolute nonsense that that's not the case. But again, when you go back to medical misogyny and you look at, I read a really interesting study while I was reading up about this actually. Women aren't as often presented in medical trials as men, which means that the interactions of drugs on female bodies isn't as widely known quite often as it is on men. And it's all well and good saying men and women are equal, blah, blah, blah. First of all, they aren't in a societal standing, but their bodies are also different in some key ways, whether it's hormonal or however you want to spin it. And if you want an actual example of this, look up the adverse effects if a man takes a woman's birth control pill. And I actually wrote about the pill during the course of writing this piece, because they actually developed in 2016 quite an effective injection for men, which would prevent them from making women pregnant. And it was shelved because of the side effects. Would you like to know what those side effects are? Depression, mood swings, headaches, tiredness, and my personal favourite, blood clots. Would you like to know what other type of medicine features those side effects? The pill. So it's acceptable for women to suffer those side effects, but when it comes to men suffering those side effects, the answer is no. It's too much of a risk, really. We can't really have men suffering those things. But you will do it for women, so you can raw dog them, right? One of my, like, she's verging on a close friend. We are always talking on different platforms and trading activist information and just stuff about how much we hate the Tories. She told me that she suffered a stroke, which was likely brought on by taking the pill. And the fact that so many women will go through that, it's just mad. And if you compare it and contrast it to the coronavirus situation, the vaccine had such a negligible risk of causing blood clots, but it was there. It could definitely cause it. in 1 in a jillion people. I don't really know what the stats are. I don't want to look them up right now, but it's a very low risk. I think it's 15 times more likely, though, that you would get a blood clot from taking the pill. So do with that information what you will. And I actually saw a fantastic video that was talking about the advent of Viagra. The original medicine that Viagra was derived from had a few key fantastic uses. One of them was helping women with period pains. One of them was helping people with heart attacks. And the other one was giving men boners. And where did the company put the main funding? That's right, making it so that men could get hard dicks. I don't really know what else to add to that, so I'm just going to move on. Another thing that's a really important topic of discussion that I feel is always lacking in, and this is no offense to other people that have podcasts or that do, regular discussions, but there's a lack of discussion of intersectionality. I've interviewed quite a few women of color, and there's some, like, I don't want to use the word fantastic because it's depressing and harrowing, but there's some brilliant work being done by women of color into how dangerous modern medicine is for them. Did you know there's still a persistent myth, which a lot of older doctors still believe, that women of color feel less pain than white people? It's not true. But can you imagine being treated by a doctor who thinks they don't have to give you any kind of numbing or pain medication because you feel less pain? That's the most out and out racist, ridiculous thing I've ever heard, and it literally comes from the days where people, well, I don't want to get into it because, like, having read about where that myth originally comes from, reparations is the least that we can do for people of color, is all I'll say. There's a TikToker actually who she instilled a phrase in my head, and I did reference it in my writing, where she said that hospitals are dangerous for women of color, and it's completely true. If you look at the statistics for child mortality rates for women of color, it's frightening when you see the disconnect, the difference, and why? Why is the question? I actually tried to do research into why and look at child mortality rates, and I mean, apart from that, making some really depressing reading, there isn't really any massive studies that have been done that have been widely publicized that gave real credence to why this is. But that's not because there aren't reasons, it's because there's too many, all of them revolving around the fact that these are women of color who don't get believed when they tell people they're in pain, when they tell people that they can't do it. As I've been recording this as well, because I have to bring in the intersection of transgender healthcare here, because trans men gave me a really unique insight into the fact that you get taken more seriously when people perceive you as men. And trans women not only experience the discrimination of being trans, but also the discrimination of misogyny. As I've been recording, I've just been made aware that the government have released more legislation talking about transgender people and their access to healthcare and rights. And as predicted, they've kept in some of the most litigious, ridiculous parts, and it's just insane. One of the most disturbing things I've ever heard was at Trans Day of Remembrance, and I had a really long chat with a black trans woman who was telling me about exactly how much she gets overlooked and ignored and overruled and disparaged and spurned, practically laughed at during all of her healthcare decisions. It's insane to me how commonplace it is. And when I told her how outraged I was, she was like, "This is normal. This is what my life is like." It goes deeper than purely, what you could term as female healthcare. It goes into exactly how difficult it is just to be taken seriously as a woman. I had one woman who was telling me that she had severe symptoms of something she didn't know what it was, and she went to the doctor, and he kept insisting that it was something to do with an irregular period. It wasn't. It turns out that she had a minor brain tumor. The doctor's dithering and delaying and trying to put mysterious symptoms down to her body instead of checking out what was wrong meant that she had to undergo a more serious operation because it had grown by the time it was properly discovered. This is the kind of stuff that I've spent weeks reading, and it really frightens me because medical misogyny seems like A quiet explosion. A firework in the middle of the ocean. It's loud and it's noisy, and there's a lot of people that could potentially be talking about it, noticing it, seeing it, spreading the word. And they aren't. Women are doing all the work and talking about it and trying to highlight it and point out what we could do about it and how we could change it. What the hell are the rest of us doing? There has to be some kind of forward motion with this, because women are in a really real way suffering, and I don't really see what a lot of people are doing about that. This for now is the most I can do, but one of the things I will recommend is that there is an absolutely fantastic organization called Sister Space, and you should 100% be supporting Sister Space, because they are absolutely brilliant. They work with women of color all over the place to try and make sure that they get treated with parity. There's also a brilliant activist out there lobbying through a group called In With The Bin, and that's In With The Bins 11 on Twitter. And their mission is to try and make it so that sanitary bins are accessible everywhere, not just in women's bathrooms, but in men's. And I can't believe this has not been thought of. There's so many benefits to that being the case. But I think one of the biggest things that I think is vital that we start talking about is making access to sanitary products for people who have periods free, because I don't understand why that's not a case. Especially in a country with socialised healthcare, you would think that that would fit in. I dread to think how much money is made by companies like Always and, you know, all of the rest of them, because they're making you pay for something that your body naturally does. It's not like paying for paracetamol because your body's gone wrong and giving you a headache, which I'd still find weird anyway. This is a natural bodily thing. And why the hell are we making people pay for products that help them deal with that? It's a natural monthly occurrence. It's not like you can say no. It's insane. Speaking of which, there's also people like Crafty Mrs. B on TikTok, who is trying to make sure that you can access reusable period products, because, you know, we're trying to not destroy the earth here. There's so many things that we can do to help women with their healthcare, with whatever goes on with them. But the only way that we can do that is to bring them out into the light and tackle them. And I think, uncomfortable as it is, talking about medical misogyny is one of those things. And it really frightens me to know that, you know, the people that I care about and love, and even, actually, you know what? I'm not going to cut this out, but I hate that phrase. I hate it when people say things like that, because whether I know and love these people or not, they deserve respect and they deserve to have good healthcare. Women out there, cis, trans, whoever, they deserve healthcare that looks after them and puts them at the forefront of their own care. They don't deserve to be overruled by doctors. They don't deserve to be ignored by medical professionals who think that they know best about somebody else's body and bodily autonomy. This is a nonsense age that we're living in, where we claim to be so enlightened and we're still holding back full autonomy over people's bodies from themselves. And that's insane, where we're holding natural bodily functions that people go through to ransom with costs, where periods are stigmatized. One of the weirdest things that happened to me a few months ago, before I left my job, one of the women in the office came up to me and like whispered and was like, "Is it okay if I go to the bathroom?" And I was like, "Yeah, you don't have to ask. We're all adults here." And she was like, "Well, I've come on my period." And I was like, "Okay. Why are you whispering?" Like, the fact that there are women out there who feel that their period's so stigmatized that they can't just say it. What a ridiculous world we live in. It's a natural bodily function that so many people go through. Drives me insane that people think that they need to ask for permission to go and sort it out. When you look at conditions like PMDD, which is extreme depression caused by hormonal imbalances and many other reasons, and the way that it's not taken seriously or investigated, or women are told. One of the women who I know who messaged me who had PMDD was told that the doctor felt she was being unhelpful towards her healthcare decisions. I don't know if you've ever had severe depression. I've never had severe depression caused by the reason that PMDD causes it, but I've had severe depression. And being overruled in your healthcare and ignored when you're trying to tell someone what dire straits you're in is the most demeaning experience that's ever happened to me. So I can't imagine what it must have been like for that poor woman. One of the trans guys who messaged me about it explained that he had something very similar happen to him. He was telling the person, like, "This is how painful it is. This is how awful I feel." And the doctor was like, well, go and get a hysterectomy then. And when the trans guy was like, well, I might want to have a child of my own one day, the doctor was basically like, don't know what to tell you. Those are the experiences of weird misogyny and trans misogyny and all of those things. They're the things that we allow to continue and propagate in our society. The worry is that misogyny is so deeply embedded into healthcare that the system might actually shake apart if we try and deal with it. But we need to deal with it. Something needs to be done. From this day forward, the people who are responsible for training others in medicine need to look at the archaic things that they've worked on, these things that have been baked into healthcare, and ask themselves, does this benefit parity with the sexes and genders? Does this look after the healthcare of the most people possible, hopefully everyone? Because if it doesn't, you have to ask yourself, are you not contributing to a system that makes women a second-class citizen by teaching these things? And if that is the case, is that the kind of medicine that you want to pursue and pass on to the next generation of doctors and nurses and ODPs and everybody else involved in healthcare? I look at misogynists the same way that I look at racists, homophobes, transphobic people, ableists. It's disgusting. And I can't believe that it continues and it's so widely spread. Half of the internet seems to be kept propped up by ridiculous misogynistic bullshit. And I don't think there's a lot we can do about that except hope and pray that people mature. But when it comes to healthcare, this is a life or death thing. So I'm starting to think that perhaps it's time that we get some kind of movement together to lobby the Royal Colleges of Medicine across the UK. And we say to them, you need to start looking at overhauling your system and making parity for women and trans people. Because this is not a system that works. Not properly. Thanks again for joining us on Politically Enraged, a podcast designed to try and support you if you're a lefty and try and report you if you're a right winger. You can find us on Instagram at Politically Enraged, at Political Rages on Twitter. My TikTok is Davy Moo, and you can also sponsor us on Ko-fi, because I'm trying my best to help the world here, but I don't have infinite funds. Thanks very much for listening, and we look forward to seeing you again for the next episode of Politically Enraged. Get politically engaged and get politically enraged.